Hello, my name is Nada Hamad. Most of you know me from Medical Mums, and I'm really excited today to share a conversation I'm having with one of my favorite podcasters. I'm speaking with Dev Raga, who is a guru in personal finance and has one of the most informative podcasts that I listen to, and certainly been a recent interest of mine. So welcome, Dev. You have so much to tell me today. I'm so excited to speak to you today. Tell me all about your podcast so that the rest of the Medical Mums community can hear why I'm so excited about this.
Thank you very much, Nada, for having me on your podcast. So to everyone listening out there, my name is Dev Raga, and my podcast channel is called Dev Raga Personal Finance. And the premise is to try and get people motivated and financially literate to talk about basic personal finance and investing concepts. I've got about 110 plus episodes at the moment. I've been going for about 2.5 years. And this all sort of started as a bit of a hobby to create 10 episodes for the benefit of my kids. So I wanted to leave them a very basic blueprint in terms of, in the rare event that dad wasn't around, they've got a blueprint to follow. And I floated it to some friends and family, and they really enjoyed it. And since then, I've just been motivated to try and record an episode a week. And I discuss basic financial concepts, economic concepts, and investing concepts. And most of my listeners are doctors and healthcare workers.
And I mean, I guess we should say that you're a doctor, Dev, which is why this is so interesting in terms of your journey to podcasting. You know, this seems to be sort of a side hustle or a hobby that's turned into something that's really quite engaging. How did you come to get the courage to kind of deviate from our general clinical practice to doing something like this? I think that's a really cool, fun story.
Yeah, so I have to say I'm a professional cheapskate, so always have been and probably always will be. I've been very careful with my money, even during my medical student days. I don't come from a wealthy background. We're first-generation immigrants. My parents migrated from India when I was 6.5, 7 to Australia. So money has always been at the forefront when I was growing up. You know, we had to be careful with money. And that's something that's been ingrained into me ever since childhood. When I was in medical school, I had a part-time job, and going through medical school interstate paid for all of my expenses myself. I was on a scholarship. So I was lucky enough to be on a federal scholarship for medical school. And again, trying to live within the means, trying to save as much money as possible through medical school. And that sort of set me up and catapulted me when I became an intern for home ownership. So, but really the motivation for me is what I realized was what I was doing in my own life in terms of paying myself first and investing and not, you know, borrowing ridiculous amounts of money and staying away from consumer debt and doing it for the long term. It turns out that most of those concepts are widespreadly taught across the financial world. But I noticed that doctors in general or healthcare workers in general, we are so focused on patient care, which is fantastic. But we tend to sort of lose sight of our finances. What I did notice was during my internship, residency and registrar years, I was pretty careful with money. Myself and my wife were very, frugal with our money, bought our first home and paid it off within, 2.5 years, which is very unusual in Melbourne, even back in 2009. But many of my colleagues weren't or didn't really share that level of interest or passion for money because we were all very motivated in terms of a career. And I think doctors and healthcare workers, because we're so motivated with career, we tend to forget about personal finances. And of course, one of the biggest lessons when it comes to money we need to learn is opportunity cost. Start early, do it regularly, save money, invest. If you did that, and those are the basic things which I'm trying to teach, you're far more likely to have more money in your retirement than you ever imagined.
I think this is one of those eye-opening moments in your podcasts where I was, just floored by my lack of knowledge about these concepts. I mean, I knew the general broad principles that, most people know about, but really thinking about how I really wasn't taught these principles, neither at school or, through, my parents or even growing up or anywhere really. And no one really put any kind of priority on it for me. Now, I have three daughters, and when you said this was a blueprint for your kids, I was hooked. My husband and I were like, okay, this is something we need to listen to because we're both really terrible at money, and we have three daughters. And as a feminist and as a proactive gender equity sort of person, I was really, really intrigued by this notion of starting early. And then I started to really think hard about what are the differences in my life compared to my male counterparts, and what the differences are going to be for my kids, my daughters. And the more I looked, the more I thought about all of this, the more I was really disappointed in the state of affairs of our society and culture, and how much money I spent as an intern on shoes. I look back and I think, I haven't even worn some of those shoes. Not to mention the handbags. And, I remember when I finished my specialty training, everyone said, you've got to buy a branded handbag. I was like, I'm not going to spend that much money on a handbag. I'd rather put that money into some kind of investment. And, those societal pressures to spend as a woman, let alone beauty products and hygiene products, but just the kind of culture and social expectation of how we should look and what we should spend on, really disadvantages us in the long term if we are to think about money as something you can invest for the long term using the power of compounding that, like you'd like to say on your podcast. I started to think about a lot of things, and I wondered from your perspective, what do you think the most important principles to remember are for women in particular? I'm now going to pander to my audience in the medical mums community and talk about women in particular. What are we missing out on, and what do we really need to think about?
Look, I mean, the stats are very clear. So there's the wage gap between men and women in Australia. I mean, it's really interesting that we're into the 21st century. It's 2021. So-called progressive society like Australia, there is still a wage gap between men and women in all industries, and that includes healthcare. Now, that gets confused between pay equality. So I'd just like to clarify the two different concepts before we sort of proceed on. Pay equality in Australia means that for the same job that a man or a woman does, they get paid the same. Now, it's illegal in Australia and a lot of other developed countries to be paid less for the same type of work that you do. Now, that's fine. But wage inequality or gender pay gap encompasses the lower participation rates in employment for women as opposed to men. And there's a number of different reasons for that. And that includes lower superannuation, accumulation phase and retirement phase for women. And it's partly because women often are involved, I suspect, in doing a lot of unpaid work and unpaid caring. And there's also, quote unquote, the motherhood tax. So when you take time off and raise children, the pay disparities, obviously you're doing unpaid caring work, so that puts you at the back foot, and that means that your superannuation on top of that doesn't grow. And for Australians, superannuation is a marvelous, marvelous concept that we have. Very fortunate to have. It's a very tax advantaged way of saving for your retirement. And in addition to that, I mean, the stats are very clear, is that the more senior positions for a woman are few and far between. There's less representation. And when that happens, then the wage gap increases even more. And generally, women are more represented by the casualisation of workforce, so part-time workers and non-permanent workers. So these are all the barriers that lead to that sort of wage gap between men and women. So that's why it's really important for everyone, and especially women, especially young girls, growing up, need to be aware that these are all the barriers that hopefully, as we move on as a society, will be removed, will be squashed, but they still exist. So we need to acknowledge that, and we need to find ways to improve female participation in the workforce, and also bridge that gap as much as we can. And learning about money and applying financial principles and concepts and improving women's financial literacy is absolutely imperative. The gender pay gap is also very prominent in healthcare.
Absolutely. I think I see this in my colleagues every day. I'm a staff specialist, and my colleagues who work part-time pretty much work the equivalent to full-time, but are being paid part-time. It's just the way we, sometimes exploit that need to split our time between caring responsibilities and career responsibilities. I think the way to smashing that wage gap is really for people to be activists around this. We need to be motivated in lobbying for better working conditions and for leveling that playing field. And in terms of, the younger generation, I really truly believe in this issue of education, because I think financial literacy, although is important for everyone, I really do believe that it's even more so important for young women. And I'm trying to think of ways to do that for my kids, my three girls. And I'm trying to highlight to them that there are inequities in the system. And I don't really want to be doing that every day to say the world is unfair. But really, when we go to when we go to Kmart or Target or wherever it is that we go, the cost of a t-shirt for a girl versus a boy, that is a very clear difference. And I don't understand how, as a society, we haven't really grappled with this. I understand recently that the period product tax has been eliminated in Australia, according to other, the same as other countries. But there's still other differences in costs beyond GST on hygiene products, which I like to call period products, because that's probably the more appropriate term. But those differences, I think, are important to be mindful of, because at some point, as they become teenagers, their interest in consumerism will increase. And I don't know if you have any advice around how to manage that, sort of getting sucked into consumerism at a young age.
So yeah, you raised some important points, and I think you're sort of referring to the pink tax is what it's commonly known as, where basically the same product or very similar product for men or boys is cheaper than for women or girls, and that includes toys, that includes clothes, that includes hygiene products or period products. So I guess if you Nada, if you ask me, so if I mean I've got two young children, the way I sort of why am I doing this? I want to make sure that their future is secure, but I also want to make sure that past me, that I'm able to leave behind hopefully a society that is better for them, because every generation has its challenges. And I think every generation hopefully will overcome those challenges and leave a society that's more progressive, more equitable, and more accessible to the next generation. Now, why is that relevant to me? I'm an immigrant. I'm a first generation immigrant in this country. I'm very fortunate to be in a position that I am at the moment, but I was given opportunities. And I think those opportunities should be available to everyone, and more opportunities. And that includes and women as well, of course. And I guess the if you were to tell me that if I took my family to dinner, and there was a price for me and there was a price for my wife, and the price for the same product, let's say we order pizza, and the price for my wife is 30% higher, that's literally what is happening in several different products. If you went to anyone on the street and said, you want a burger, it's $5 at McDonald's, but if your, little child who's happens to be a girl wants the same burger, it's now $7.50. No one would accept that as an acceptable standard. Yet when it comes to, period products and hygiene products and toys and clothes, etc., it's accepted. And I think it's an interesting thing that there's a fair bit of unconscious bias, being a male, that once you start recognizing this, you sort of go, well, clearly there's that is part of the wage gap. It's not just what you get paid, it's also what you get, what you have to spend to be able to, to lead a average life just like any other person, any other male would. And therein lies, yes, we've got to break all those barriers. And the only way we're going to do that is by spreading the message of finance and making sure that we all understand the basic principles. You've got three young kids, so obviously, by behaving in a way that is, financially literate, and teaching them about debt and teaching them about consumerism, is setting an example, and that will go, much further, in my humble opinion, than teaching them about index funds or ETFs. I think if you just taught them on paying themselves and savings rates and, try not to borrow consumer debt, that those three things and, saving for retirement, those three or four concepts would resonate. And then everything else, the nitty-gritty of index funds or ETFs or Vanguard or self-wealth and all that sort of stuff, that'll come with due course.
Absolutely. And I think you've hit the nail on the head. Is it's about empowering them to understand these principles from a young age and empowering them to make choices around how they spend their money, being discerning in what they're getting for their money. Those are lessons I wish I'd learned a long time ago. And some of that is potentially recognizing that there's an element of unfairness. I think, like you said, most people wouldn't be happy if they thought that they were being swindled. And I never thought about it that way when I was younger, buying my clothes or my shoes or my deodorant or shampoo. It never occurred to me that I was being charged more, until someone pointed out that, my shampoo is more expensive than my husband's even brand. And all of a sudden the whole world kind of changes and you start to see things all over the place. And especially, when you measured you, when you talked about the mothering tax, that comes in multiple ways. Both the caring for others that is unpaid, but also the perception of others when you do try and buy something of high value. You're trying to go get your buy your car or buy your house or negotiate your mortgage. There's so much in that has become more obvious to me in terms of our social and cultural disparities. I'm pretty sure I don't get the good deals that my white male counterparts would, going in there as a woman or even going in there with my little toddler when I'm trying to negotiate things. Not to mention that kind of dismissiveness that you might encounter when you're talking to people about money, talking to an accountant or a financial advisor. I often get questions like, "Oh, so when's your husband going to come?" or "When do we get to meet your husband?" And those things infuriate me, as they must do many women in the medical mums community. And then the other thing, of course, is I often am challenged by the notion that there's no way around it and that there are some entrenched systems that are very difficult to move. For example, when I was pregnant, in my last third pregnancy, it just happened to be the time I had left to look through my finances and try and sort out my insurances. And as soon as I mentioned that I was pregnant, that everybody had to go, "Oh, hold up, stop. We can't do anything. We can't increase your income protection because you're pregnant." or we can't refinance your mortgage because you're pregnant. There was even a situation in my life insurance where I was trying to get an alternative insurer, and they said to me, "Oh, we've measured your belly, and that makes you too, that's too much. We don't have pregnancy measurements, so you're essentially too fat for us to insure, based on a measurement during your 8 month pregnancy." And I thought to myself, there's clearly systems in play here where people have really not taken into account the female gender in either high-paying job or in financially literate sort of circles. And I'm not sure how we address that, but I do love the fact that you're talking about this, and wonder if you have any advice for women trying to negotiate these spaces, particularly in the high-income earning capacity that many of the women in medicine have.
Yeah, look, I mean, the main premise of my podcast channel is the three E's, that is to be educated, and with that education, the second E is empowerment, and the third E is entertainment. So, I think if we can empower and make finance more palatable for everyone, including women, if we can improve financial literacy amongst the female community, that in itself, getting educated, allows them to be empowered in order to walk into a situation like your accountant or your insurance agent or your real estate broker or your bank manager, and speak at a level that they automatically getting a signal that, hey, look, don't treat me as if I'm some sort of a financially naive person. I know what compounding is. I know what fee structures are. I know what trust accounts are. The biggest thing that I can say is read about it, learn about it, talk about it. Particularly in healthcare workers, there seems to be this sort of dare I say, shame in making money as a doctor or a nurse. I think if you've got a specific skill set that's taken you 10 to 20 years to refine and master and perfect your craft, then I think it's okay to make money, provided it's done in a way that's ethical and you're not ripping off your fellow colleagues or patients or whatever it is. And ultimately the core of this is to do the right thing by your patient, to try and do the best clinical care that you can. And when you do that, patients will like you, word will spread, and I say the riches will follow. And once you get that pathway going, you need to also on the side think about yourself about, okay, what are you going to do with those riches? What are some of the things that you can do? And to keep it really, really simple, forget about investment returns. If you don't save any money, then the investment returns are zero. So these are all very, very basic concepts. And I think if we are able to do that throughout our lives, then our children will observe. And I think the power of observation, and the power of just following the footsteps of your parent, it's so subconscious, it's so subtle, but it happens. Everything from the way that you talk, the way that you behave, the way you drive your car, the way you explain things to other people, the way you treat family members and friends, kids are watching, and they will learn just by observing you and observation, and it's a very, very powerful tool. And for that to happen, we need to learn. I think everyone needs to learn about money, and it's okay to learn and talk about
I'm
money.
so pleased that you brought up the point because I think many women struggle with valuing their skills, valuing their strengths, being able to articulate them, and certainly putting a value on them financially. I think many of my colleagues who are in private practice struggle with the pull between not charging more and the need to do so because they spend more time with their patients, so they see less patients, or they do more complex care that's associated with a female demographic that might gravitate towards them. So there are many reasons why in medicine women are undervalued, both in the public and in the private sector. And I think some of that, we have to really empower each other and empower women to learn how to put a value on their skills. I agree that it's an important skill to have and an important skill that children should observe of women, especially professional women. It is, I think it's very important.
And Nada, I mean, I don't want to get too political, but it has to come from the top, and that includes politicians with what's happened in the last several weeks, particularly this week. And again, children are watching. Children across Australia, your children, my children are watching. It's amazing how much they gather. We think about, what's a 10-year-old going to learn about politics? Well, they learn a lot, and it has to come from the top. And of course, within our family structure, the top is, parents. It has to come from
I
the top.
agree with you. I think there's no better time like the present to really push this issue around empowering women, around gender equity, around diversity and inclusion of people who are different, and being okay with that difference, but also acknowledging the power and strength that comes in that diversity and what women have to offer culturally, societally, financially, economically. The issues happening politically really are reflective of our community, our country, our society, what our values are. And I think it's time that we really fight hard. And I think, women who are practicing in medicine, we are actually very powerful as a community, as a group, to speak out against some of those injustices and lobby for change from a political and from a cultural perspective. So I think I love how where this went. I didn't expect us to get into that, Deb, but that was a lot of fun.
I think if I'm not mistaken, majority of healthcare workers in Australia
Oh yeah.
are women. Majority of doctors in Australia are women, and the majority of medical students are female. So how could it be that purely from a numbers perspective, women dominate healthcare industry, but on the other hand, even in the healthcare industry, there are some, gender inequities. I think we just need to talk about it. And through talk, hopefully action will come. And like I said, the way I look at my life is when I'm no longer here, when I'm nearing retirement and, moving on, I hope I reflect on it in 30, 40 years' time that we will leave a society which is going to be more equitable, more prosperous, and more fairer for all Australians. And there's a fine saying in Australia called "Everyone just wants a fair go," and that includes women, that includes people of color and people of lower socioeconomic background. We just No one's, asking for a, special helping hand. We're just asking to be paid the fair amount of money for the work, and also try and bridge that gap as much as we can. And before we finish up, there's a huge class action lawsuit now for junior doctors, men, women, everyone joining together and saying, enough is enough. We work so hard. Our careers are on the balance. Just pay us what we do our work for. I don't think that's a radical concept. It's not a radical concept to be paid for the work that you do.
Absolutely. And I love that we ended on that note because, I think it's about coming together. It's about recognizing those inequities. Most of the time, we're siloed in our own worlds. We were trying so hard to just get the work done, go home, and actually just get some sleep, or look after the kids and get the school lunches or whatever it is that we do that it occupies our entire world when we don't actually get to, look up and see what's actually happening ahead of us and what is ahead of us in terms of obstacles and in terms of progress. So, I love your podcast, Deb. I really learned a lot from it. I think I'll teach my kids a lot because of it. It's made me think in different ways about money and really brought home for me the gendered aspect of it. Even though it's not a major feature in your podcast, it just happened to open my eyes to it in my life. And today, I hope the medical mums community and anyone else who's listening has learned something, hopefully thinks about things a little bit differently. It's all interconnected. It all plays into how we may be held back in realizing our goals and ambitions in life, including financial stability and security for ourselves and our children. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me. I had a fantastic time going through this conversation with you. I really enjoyed your journey into podcasting and going into a creative field despite the burden of clinical work. I think it's doable. I think the current environment allows us all to seek creative outlets. So thank you for your hobby and your passion. That's taught me a great deal, and I'm sure we'll all learn a lot from it. So again,
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me, Nada, and
thank
absolute
you.
pleasure.
Thanks very much to Dev and Nada for a very informative episode of Medical Mums Chat, and thanks for listening. If you want to let us know about a story that you'd love to hear or tell, or any feedback about the podcast, you can contact us by downloading Anchor and leaving a voice message. We'll incorporate it into our future episodes. You can send us a message on Facebook, or we do have an email, not regularly monitored, but we'll check it from time to time, mmamtbpods@gmail.com. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Over and out. Till next time.